This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. From our Lake Wasota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
On a Thanksgiving morning, as we play back some of our favorite interviews of the year, I'm Pat Kreitlow. I'll tell you more about what's ahead in a bit, but we're going to get right into our discussion with Dan Jacobs. And Luke Mathers is with me just to say, Luke, Top Chef Wisconsin, favorite show of the year? Favorite guest for you?
The favorite? Yeah, by far. This was awesome.
We started by asking Dan about the... He was speaking out on the elections, and he was very supportive of Tammy Baldwin. He was very supportive of what the Main Street Association was doing to help small businesses. So we started by asking him about that.
I mean, Tammy's amazing. As a small business owner, you know, I'm trying to use my voice in this election. You know, we need more elected officials like Tammy who prioritize things like healthcare, childcare, capital access, and support entrepreneurs who can, you know, start their growth, start their businesses. You know, Tammy's had our back during COVID, especially. Like, I think I remember back, you know, with Independent Restaurant Coalition, reaching out to the senator and asking her for support for the Restaurant Revitalization Fund, and she was always there. We were able to get $28.6 billion for independent restaurants across the country. And, you know, she saved quite a few restaurants, including her own, because of that. So, you know, being able to show a little bit of support any way I can is just great. You know, the restaurants... Dan Esterev, we don't take a political stance. We really try to, you know, kind of just stay even. But me as a person, I see what Tammy Baldwin does in our neighborhoods, in our communities, and I have to be able to speak out and support her.
We're seeing these new organizations that are popping up as well to be advocating for issues like that, healthcare, access to capital for small businesses like restaurant owners. One organization here in Wisconsin that's doing a lot with that is Main Street Alliance. Can you tell us a little bit more about your work with Main Street Alliance?
I mean, you're absolutely correct. Like, I always look at the election as like the gateway to your civic engagement. You know, basically our elected officials are a phone call away at any time. I literally have Congress on my cell phone, and all you have to do is, you know, the operator answers the phone, you tell them where you want to go, and you get right into that. They direct you right to that office. Sure, you're not going to speak to the senator or congressperson like right away, but being able to tell your story, being able to tell them how you feel about a certain issue really kind of generates momentum. And I think that's where organizations like Main Street Alliance really come in strong. We're able to kind of organize a lot of voices going in the same direction. And, you know, especially at a national level, squeaky wheel gets the grease. And it really helps having a lot of voices kind of saying the same things. I got involved with Main Street Alliance back in 2020. I met Sean Fedeplace, who was kind of, you know, just the kind of the boots on the ground guy for Main Street Alliance in those days. And it was great to know that there was like an organization that not just for restaurants, but for small businesses in general that had our back, that wanted to see, you know, things change and wanted to see, you know, the things that make our community so special. Like, you look around Wisconsin, you look around the city of Milwaukee, you know, independent restaurants, I'm just going to speak on independent restaurants because that's what I know. We're the gateway to communities. We're the gateway to how you learn about a culture. And I think it's just so important to have organizations like Main Street Alliance and Independent Restaurant Coalition and the James Beard Foundation just really having our back.
Well, that also leads to a question about one of the issues, and that would be the Farm Bill. We've talked about it on this program repeatedly, especially through our climate segments, talking about conservation programs, but we only seem to talk about it from that farm standpoint, and yet you are one of many chefs and people in the restaurant industry who signed a letter asking Congress to pass a Farm Bill and to protect these conservation-related programs. Why would a big city chef and others in your field do something like that?
I mean, our relationships are directly related between farmers and us. Like I think my longest standing and most rewarding relationships I've had over the years working in restaurants has been with farmers. We use a group of farmers, you know, I see them every week at the farmer's market. We spend hundreds of dollars a week at the farmer's market. I think during the height of summer, which is because of climate change, is more like September, we spend like $1,200 a week at the farmer's market. I signed on with the James Beard Foundation's climate change effort because I thought it was incredibly important to make sure that the Farm Bill, which is a volume of a bill, specifically puts aside, so they have a $20 billion conservation fund. It's in the Farm Bill. But the House version of it, it's kind of broad, and it also, you know, really is, it's kind of a large gray area as to what that means. I think what we're trying to do is specifically ask for climate smart agriculture. And these are things that have been being done, crop rotation, tillage, mulching. I mean, these are things that have been done forever, but I think it really is one of those things that kind of helps farmers be able to do things in the right way. And if people don't believe in climate change, I mean, it's crazy to me to think that it doesn't. I mean, we see it in the seasons now. Like, I remember 10 years ago, we would start getting peas and rhubarb in like late April, early May. Well, now we're not getting that stuff until like June. Everything pushes back. Like I said earlier, like the height of summer, which used to be like middle of August, is now more like middle of September. Everything keeps getting pushed back a little bit more, and we see the effects of change. Or like this year, we had, you know, huge rains and then nothing. And so, you know, the farmer who grows our greens and our cabbages for Dandan, Suncraft Farms, I mean, they had whole crops lost because just blown out with water. And this is something that's relatively new within the last 10 years, and that's directly related to climate change.
And as Pat mentioned at the top, you're a very busy man of late, and you didn't have to take the time out to do the advocacy that you're doing. Part of the reasons why you're so busy, Dan, I believe, is coming up as one of the finalists for this past season of Top Chef. And so Pat has teased me throughout since the Wisconsin announcement about how much my love for Top Chef is pretty evident when he started talking to me about it. I was geeking pretty hard when the announcement for the Wisconsin season came out. Can you tell us
I can fact check that. That is true. That is.
I was over the moon. And for me, I don't really love the term foodie. It's not like something that I usually typically use to describe myself. But my wife and I have a lot of reverence for food. Like, we enjoy cooking together. Our favorite things to do is to go out and eat at new restaurants. We recently had a date night at Dandan. It was fantastic.
Nice.
So hats off to you there. We couldn't choose from the menu, just the few. Like, there were a few things that we wanted to get that we were just like, we're not going to be able to eat this time, so next time we're gonna nice. Get those items. But can you tell us a little bit about the experience of being on Top Chef, being the hometown kid in representing Milwaukee in a Wisconsin edition of the season?
Well, I mean, first off, it was terrifying. Like, I looked around the room when we first got there, and I realized I was the only one from Wisconsin, and it was like, oh shit, I have to do really well. Like, all right, game on. So it was. It was definitely a little jarring, but it's, I mean, man, they really, you know, it's tough, and it's more mentally tough, I think, than anybody really lets on. Like, it's definitely like, it's the people that last the longest, I think, are the people that are the most like mentally tough. They're able to kind of, you know, I used to joke around, but I used to say, like, just be like water and just let things happen, because you're completely out of control. And this is from a bunch of people like chefs who are like control freaks. you know, and we all of a sudden you're taken out of your ability to control what's going on. And it's tough, you know. It was incredibly fun. I met so many people that I'm going to be friends with for the rest of my life. You know, it was to be able to get all the way to the finale and basically come in second place. I'm incredibly happy with the performance that I was able to put forth. I even said to Danny when he won, I hugged him and I told him that, you know, I'm happy to be his number two anytime. And it, you know, it was close, but it was, you know, it came down to Danny made like something that nobody's ever done before. Like this candied seaweed cantaloupe dessert was amazing. It was delicious, but it also elicited like a memory, a childhood memory for Tom. As soon as he said that, I was like, well, I didn't win. Like, I was like, I'm not going to win this. But it was, I mean, it was so much fun and it was such a cool experience. There was nothing like it. And given the opportunity to do it again, I would do it in a second.
Oh, I mean, you applied many, many times. You were very, you persevered. you were going to get there, and then you did get there. And I think we really did see, the mental fatigue, the anguish of not having control over what you're making. And so that's one of the questions I wanted to ask you is, of all the different things you made, it's not your favorite, because that's probably something familiar. What were you most proud of from the standpoint of you need to come up with something fast, and you did it and you nailed it? Which one were you happiest about?
You know, I look back and I think it coincides with my favorite challenge as well. And I think that was the Indigenous Foods Challenge. First off, that challenge is really cool because of the lack of spotlight, I think, that cuisine gets. You know, there's Sean Sherman and Elena Terry, who are both friends of mine. They cooked for us before the challenge. And Sean asked this question about, has any chef actually eaten in Indigenous restaurant? And none of us said yes. And that to me was just like, it was like, man, this needs to change. Like we need to correct this. It was, you know, it was a difficult challenge in the fact they took away all of the colonial ingredients. So anything that was post colonial times, so like butter, sugar, flour, citrus, like these are things that, like, especially like citrus, I mean, we use that all the time. And so it was like, okay, you really got to rethink how you do stuff. Like, how do I get that sort of zing that I would get out of citrus, or, you know? And it was really fun. And the dish I ended up making was like basically using a whole sunflower, like taking a vegetable and using it all the way through, and then fortifying it with goose, which is something I don't usually cook. And it was really fun. I was, you know, I'm most proud of the fact that, like, I basically on Top Chef, I didn't really cook anything that was on any of our menus, or, you know, I basically cooked like from my heart on all the challenges and just kind of, you know, see what would happen. It was really fun.
I could ask you so many more questions about it, but we really appreciate you joining us, Dan. We really appreciate you for your advocacy and the work that you're doing in the community as well.
Dan, thanks again so much. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Chef.
Back with more in a bit. You're up north.
You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Back now on Up North News Radio. Up North News is a separate entity from Civic Media. You can find our friends there at civicmedia.us. From an Up North News standpoint, of course, you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Head over to upnorthnewswi.com and click subscribe up in the top banner there, and you'll be all set with an early morning delivery of news and features from Christina Laurie, who put things together. Sharita Booker, our social media manager, puts things on Facebook and Instagram and TikTok. She's got an article on Facebook up about the story behind Wisconsin's iconic Mars Cheese Castle. Its roots going back to October of 1947. So you can go check that out on the Up North News social media page. You can also follow us, like I said, on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok. If you're watching us on Facebook or YouTube right now, you can see our handles right there. Up North News WI for most of these platforms, except for TikTok, where all you got to look up is Up North News. As I was looking at some of the texts and other messages that have come in the comment sections and things like that, one that stuck out at me was listening to people who are very unhappy about the election results. And here it is. It was Angie on Facebook who writes simply, "Wow, give him a chance before the sob story starts." Angie, we did. It was called his first term in office, and it was a disaster that somehow has been memory-holed through the pandemic and through a sane washing campaign by right-wing media of amazing proportions for people to forget about the chaos and to think things were actually better 4 years ago. Now, I'm not talking 7 and 8 years ago when the economy was better pre-pandemic, because he had nothing to do with that. That was all the Obama administration setting it up and handing it to him on a platter, just as, you know, we're handing him the economic resurgence enjoyed under the Biden administration. Now, as we discussed with Joe Zepecki last hour, the things that are done to fix an economy, you don't turn an aircraft carrier on a dime. But as it's turning, you have plenty of opportunity to disagree about the course that is going on. And so the economy is going to be better and better in the coming year, unless Trump does something to screw it up. And he definitely could do it. But what we need people to stop doing is stop wishing for fantasy Trump. That is going to do all these unifying things that are going to benefit all Americans. Because again, he had a chance to do that. He told us in 2016 that he was going to go after Wall Street. Remember that? He said, "I'm an inside guy from Wall Street. I know how things work, and I know how to make it work for the middle class." And he did nothing of the sort. He rewarded them with tax cuts geared toward the wealthy that blew a $2 trillion hole in the deficit. Fantasy Trump was going to give us a big, beautiful health care plan to replace the Affordable Care Act, and he never proposed anything. Fantasy Trump said, "I'm a builder. I'm going to build things, and we're going to create so many jobs. It's going to be Infrastructure Week." And then next week was Infrastructure Week, and the next week was Infrastructure Week, and he didn't propose a thing. The only thing he accomplished was a tax cut bill. Otherwise, he was starting trade wars, both with hostile nations and our adversaries and our allies. And that just simply drove prices up for American consumers and cratered markets for American farmers. And the only reason farmers didn't go under was that Trump, again, using deficit spending, sent billions of dollars in checks to American farmers to make up for the tariffs. He's not special. He wasn't special in his first term. He's not going to be fantasy Trump in the second term. He wants to be Viktor Orban of Hungary, who did what he could to go after press adversaries, adversaries in education circles, rig elections. He wants to be his buddy Putin or dictator Xi from China. His jobs plan is another tax cut for the rich, which won't create jobs. His inflation plan, all he talked about, he won because he kept talking about inflation and how people still feel like prices are too high. His inflation plan is higher prices through tariffs. Those tariffs are going to increase prices. He kept lying to people and they bought it, saying that, oh, the foreign countries are going to be paying these tariffs. No, they're not. His government efficiency plan is to fire civil servants who are federal government employees who do not have to swear any kind of an oath to a party or a president, and replace the civil service with people who do have to swear an oath of allegiance to the president of the United States. So it's going to be all political cronies who will find ways to do favors for those folks who were Trump supporters and to drag their feet to people who are not Trump supporters. His health care plan involves the state courts because in the case of abortion care, for example, we now have a checkerboard. Depending on which side of a state line you're in, a state court may have decided that women have rights. You step over the line, another state court and legislature have determined that you have restrictions, not rights. And to any degree that he can do that with more of health care and send it to the states under the guise of states' rights is a win for him. Although, again, just yesterday on Fox News, his daughter-in-law, who chairs the National Republican Party, was talking about wishing for one of the first things they may do is nationalize elections. Again, under the guise of streamlining them. But right now we have purposefully a decentralized election run by clerks all over the country who then report their local results. If you put it all under one national bureaucracy run by Donald Trump, you're going to finally understand what people were talking about when saying democracy was at risk. We're not going to be getting fantasy Trump. We're going to be getting somebody who's going to be using executive orders to do serious damage starting right away on January 20th, and we have to be prepared to stand up to that and resist in any way we can. Our friends from Motherhood for Good are next. You're up north.
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com.
Welcome back to Up North News Radio on this Thursday morning, November 7th, coming off of an election campaign, a long year, and the next one isn't that far away. We'll be doing state Supreme Court. And also, I forgot, State Superintendent Jill Underley will be running for another term at the Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction. So there will be things to talk about right after the first of the year. But let's just set that aside for now. Our friends Kate Duffy and Nicole Slavin from Motherhood for Good are here. How are you guys? seriously, Nicole, you can go first.
You know, it's just kind of one of those things. You just have to take it in and drink your water and sit on the couch and stare into the abyss for a bit. And then more importantly, reach out to your community. Like I will say, the thing that struck me very quickly is how many people reached out to me to ask if I was okay, which I was like so worried about all these other people. So what struck me very quickly is that we care. We have this network, and that's the base that you're going to need for the work that comes next.
That really was what a lot of yesterday was about, people reaching out and getting that sense of community and caring. Kate, I hope you had that same positive part of the day.
Yeah, I mean, I talked to so many people yesterday, and you know, I think people look to us also, you know, as kind of community leaders to make them feel okay and talk about what's next. And we've built up this like wonderful community at Motherhood for Good. So it was helpful to me even to like, you know, wallow for a little bit, but then really go into the mode of, you know, talking to all these people and, you know, telling them, yeah, it's going to be rough, but we're going to make it through together. And there are things we can do to keep moving forward. And this is how politics is, you know, it swings back and forth. Of course, this time is particularly scary for a number of very valid reasons, but you know, we're going to keep moving forward. It's never, ever over. Yeah.
I think that, I mean, look, this would have been a not fun set of election results anyway. But I think in a way, we kind of set ourselves up for further disappointment in that after the Dobbs decision, which was, of course, an earthquake and drew an immediate backlash in state after state, red state after red state, voters showed up and said, no, we want to protect abortion rights. Even in Florida this week, the referendum failed, but it got 57% of the vote in Florida, you know, but it didn't hit the 60% threshold needed down there to amend the state constitution. And I think with all those successes, it seemed almost, well, it kind of felt inevitable that it was going to lead to Kamala Harris being in the White House and work on, you know, codifying Roe v. Wade. And without any real setbacks since Dobbs, here's the first one, and it's, Nicole, it's a big one, and it sucks, but Kate's right, the work goes on.
It's so true, and I think the biggest call out on all of this is the actual issues. People care about the issue. It's you know, if you strip the political party and the person running for election away from it, generally speaking, most people agree with the policies that the more progressive party is trying to forward. My sister lives in Missouri. She was very happy to see both minimum wage, paid sick time leave, and the abortion proposition be passed. So I think at the issue level, that is where the work needs to be. And what I would encourage everyone is to find something locally, get connected to ground base level in your community, because the people that are going to be affected most by what's about to happen with a Trump presidency are the people who are most at risk and will be hit the hardest. So I would just encourage everybody to please get out there and start doing that work.
I'm glad you mentioned the Missouri ballot initiatives, though, because one of the things that was making people's heads explode yesterday was that people in these states were voting yes on these very progressive issues, and yet also voting for Trump or voting out two really good Democratic senators in Sherrod Brown in Ohio and John Tester in Montana, even as, again, they were embracing the policies. But so there's definitely something there about the Democratic Party brand, that these issues that they hold dear are popular and get passed, but the party itself finds itself, you know, with an image problem. And I talked about that in the last segment, and we'll deal with that another time in terms of the media system that's out there for the right wing, and all the groups that are out there. But you guys are part of the remedy for this, along with Up North News and Civic Media and a whole host of other things. So You're saying, Kate, you're keeping the band together.
I have so much to say about this. If yesterday I was sad, this morning I woke up with a fire in my belly. And I want to be careful with my words here, because I am going to talk about this, but I want to do it in a way that's effective. But I think the Democratic Party and just like the other, you know, media entities that are aligned with it have a real reckoning in terms of how they're messaging to people and how that messaging is reaching people. Like you said, in a blind taste test, people like Democratic policies. They're struggling with electing the politicians. And, you know, yes, we are a part of that, but we are full on grassroots. And I have to say that means like full on unfunded. And the systems that are set up on the right are not only incredibly well-funded and well-supported, but they've been building up this infrastructure for more than 10 years. And I think we need to have a real conversation about how to reach and speak with real Americans.
I couldn't agree more. We've gone through this with other cycles, certainly after 2010, for example, was another cycle where we did that. And it's a much more partisan political discussion about, you know, the Democratic Party, what it stands for, and that people like some of the positions, they don't like some of the others. They feel like it's gone too far in, oh Lord, I hate this word, wokeness, which, you know, again, for folks who aren't familiar with the show here, and I can't say the whole word on the radio, those folks that like to denigrate the word woke is very simple. Woke means don't be an a-hole to other people. It's that simple. And if you're yelling about wokeness, then you got to look inside. But the point remains, there are people that don't think that some of those things should be as high a priority as, you know, economic issues should be. I don't envy anybody who is a state party chair, because you're going to get all these conflicted messages, just as there are there. People are as mad at Joe Biden as they are mad at the people who they feel pushed Joe Biden out. And we don't know what the right answer is, and we don't care. We're talking here about, you know, how we move forward from here. And I think after this week, Kate and Nicole, it's kind of a case, Nicole, of saying, okay, all right, how do we make this productive and forward-looking? And I imagine that's what you and Kate and some of the other folks will be doing as you look to 2025.
Yep, you're exactly right. For me, I'll tell you, my day yesterday started with a call at 6 a.m. from my college student who is non-binary, which is a parenting moment there is no playbook for, of how do you tell your kid it's going to be okay when you don't know it's going to be okay? So for me, yeah, you just do the work. You jump in and you make the world safe for the people who need it to be safe. First of all, there's going to be a lot of people affected. And on those issues, we can start that right now. We were already starting it. We're already doing it. So you're exactly right. How do we become more inclusive? Our messaging needs to be more appealing to more people. It can't just be all of the same people. So you're exactly right. We will jump in and start doing that work to get connected.
And I do want to add to what I was saying before. I just want to clarify that I think Kamala Harris was an incredible candidate, like, yes, amazing. And I have had the chance to meet her twice, and she's so wonderful and warm and down to earth. And we are devastated that she lost. And even at the state level, there's so many candidates. So the issues I'm like kind of bringing to the surface don't have to do with the candidates. It's about like the consultants and messaging decisions and carefulness behind the scenes. I think, you know, the reason conservatives won is, for better or for worse, they found out how to talk to people like regular people and get on their level.
Oh, sure. There's a lot about the lingo. There's a lot about accessibility. There's a particular candidate who lost their race this week that I am very frustrated with, that they're, you know, they were freewheeling, always willing to engage, until, you know, the campaign got serious and you bring in a manager and consultants, and suddenly it was shut them up and don't do any interviews, don't get any exposure. And, you know, that to me was a huge mistake in what had been a huge race. But we have to go, you know, forward and look at how we can affect change from here. But it starts at home. And Kate, I don't mean to pick on you, but you're the one with the young kids here. And we saw more than a few posts yesterday of people having to talk to their children and break some news to them. And you talk about crash courses like you did a minute ago. You got that crash, or Nicole, you mentioned crash courses in parenting. It's talking to the little kids and saying and telling the story of, yeah, turns out there are setbacks, but that's not the end of the story. And that was a talk I'm sure you didn't want to have, and a whole lot of other moms didn't want to have this week, but this is what you do.
Yeah. And, you know, my 4-year-old Charlie, you know, I bring him to stuff with me. He's been to her rallies. He loves Kamala. And I was worried about telling him. And as a 4-year-old does, he kind of brought me back to life, because I sat him down. I said, I got to tell you something. You know, Kamala isn't going to be president. And he goes, did she die? And I said, no, she didn't die. It's just the other guy won, and she's not going to be in charge anymore. So he was very relieved to know that she's alive and well, which I guess is good perspective. But the other thing is, then we're working with him on, you know, personal space and bodily autonomy, just in terms of like, you know, if somebody tells you to stop. And he goes, well, I know she's not going to be in charge, but at least she's in charge of her own body, because everybody's the boss of their own body, right? And I'm like, you know, you got to half lie there, you know, and be like, yep, bud, she's going to be the boss of her own body, which
is not always going to be the case from a legal standpoint, which is why the work has to go on. When my sister texted yesterday, one of my sisters texted and said, you know, where do we go from here? And the first thing that came to mind was I texted back, be an ally. You know, that's because, again, I'm going to be okay, but I don't have to be okay behind closed doors. I can go outside and I can be an ally for those who are going to get bullied otherwise, who are going to get treated unfairly. You can go speak out against proposed, you know, book bans and other school policies. So, Nicole, I'm sure when your members gathered together, you had one set of activities for the election, but you're still going to be looking for new ways to increase civic engagement, you know, that isn't in an election season.
You're exactly right. Show up. That's little. I think I wrote show up in more text messages yesterday than I ever have used that phrase. But there are people who are going to need us. And you're exactly right. For many of us, we will be okay. But those of us who are not, those are the people we need to stand up for and be visible and be vocal about it. Just stop this concern of using your voice. Just let it go. It we're here. That it already happened. Like, you just need to show up at this point. It's that important.
Yeah. Kate, I can't even imagine anybody called you and said they're walking away, because you guys are just such good motivators. So I'm sure it was just a lot of counseling, but not actually telling people not to withdraw entirely.
Well, no. And you know what? Like, the followers started increasing, got a bunch of new newsletter signups, which, you know, tells me people are ready to work. And, you know, we've been around now for 2.5 years, and elections have always just been part of what we do. Our whole mission is to get moms and women engaged between cycles and build out that infrastructure and make people, you know, informed and engaged, so that when these like critical elections come around in Wisconsin, which they always do, that they're easier to plug in and we don't have to ramp people up again. So there's going to be a ton of work to do, not only with the Supreme Court election, but we're going to have a lot of work to do with like calling members of Congress about legislation and stuff with this next administration. And we will have plenty for people to do.
I would imagine with the state budget as well, because yes, now you have much more realistic majorities.
Yep.
For Republicans in the Assembly and Senate, and they can't just do a my way or the highway thing, or they're going to get more of them are going to get pinged off in 2026. So, Nicole, we can probably close on that note, that when we start talking about the state budget, there will be plenty of engagement going on there.
You're exactly right. And they work for us. So it is our civic duty to hold them accountable and make sure that they are doing that work. And so, to Kate's point, yeah, stay tuned. We will certainly be helping people along the way in there.
Exactly. And let me address one thing that came in on the text line from Lynn in Oconomowoc, talking about the Republicans basically creating the Democrats' image, lying in there and talking about the media. Lynn, we're going to talk a lot about the media tomorrow with Mark Jacob, no doubt about that. So we'll save the media discussion for another time. But from the standpoint of parenthood and civic engagement, Kate, Nicole, you guys are absolute heroes, and I cannot thank you enough for all you've done and that you're going to keep doing it. So thank you. Yep. Rest well. We'll talk in a couple of weeks.
Sounds good.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
An inquiring radio audience wants to know, was Luke Mathers the inspiration for the drum song by Todd Rundgren?
I just love that you call it the drum song.
Yes. Well, that's what I always called it. I think. Does it have an official title?
Yeah, it's Bang the Drum All Day.
No, I always knew it as the drum song. That's it.
Okay. That's fair.
Yeah, you know, it's.
I think when I was 12, when I might have first heard it, that was probably how I referred to it as well. But, you know, I give it its true name now.
If you missed it about an hour ago, we were talking about Luke and his musical background, which includes a lot of percussion.
And not Beethoven,
but just wanting to bang on things. And so his parents rightly got him into music. But that leads us into talking about the Packers getting set to play tonight, a Thanksgiving night game. And I'll be the first to admit, Luke, Thanksgiving night games do nothing for me. Unless, of course, the Packers are in.
Okay.
Unless the Packers are, but for any other year, by the the first two games will almost always be on in the background, but by the night, it's like, no, we're usually watching like, you know, Christmas Vacation or something like that. But that won't be the case around Wisconsin tonight. People are kind of doing the dishes up a little bit earlier so they can watch tonight's game.
Oh yeah, it's going to be a good one. I'm excited for them to be able to host the Miami Dolphins too on Thanksgiving. It's going to be a fun one. Are they down in Miami or are they home?
No, they're home.
Okay. Yeah. I wanted to make sure that we were hosting the Dolphins. Mm-hmm. Because this time of year they get a good little advantage when, you know, folks from South Beach have to come up and play
right.
in Wisconsin's Thanksgiving climate rather than the other way around. I know, I think last year, the year before, we went down to Miami for Christmas Day, wasn't it? So the Packers kind of getting a holiday reverse on the Dolphins.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I'll be watching all the football today. It'll be a good one.
I just want to see if we're going to have a repeat of the Josh Jacobs show, because that was fun to watch. I mean, you always knew he was going to have some kind of a real breakout game, and he was just a bulldog helping the Packers to that 38-10 victory on Sunday. And so, I don't know what the game plan is for Miami versus San Francisco. And there were a lot of other fun players, but for me, Jacobs was really the star of the game back on Sunday.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was the Josh Jacobs show for sure. And it's exciting to see when you sign a big name like that. And then all of a sudden, it's not that he's been having a bad season to this point, but there was he was due for a breakout game in the green and gold. And so last Sunday's numbers, like 100 plus yards, 3 touchdowns, this is a statement game by Josh Jacobs in his green and gold.
Yeah, this will be, folks didn't hear it earlier, the first of 4 night games in a row. You've got this game, and then they play again next Thursday night at Detroit. So that's going to be a huge battle in the division. And then they get 10 days off. That's followed by a Sunday night game at Seattle. That's December 15th. And then that's followed by a home game on December 23rd at home against the New Orleans Saints. But that's a Monday night game. So 4 night games in a row. And frankly, Luke, the last two can be flexed. One is at the Vikings, and then they wrap up at Lambeau against the Bears. It is entirely possible. We're looking at 6 primetime games here.
Yeah, and it seems like the folks putting together the NFL schedule had a feeling maybe Green Bay was going to be relevant this time of year. So that's nice to see.
Well, it is, because I remember last year, and you know, people were kind of optimistic about Jordan Love, but he wasn't like any kind of a proven commodity, of course. And so there were definitely fewer primetime games than in many, many years previous. And yeah. So it's very interesting to see how they've looked at the end of the schedule and kind of made a bet that the Packers were going to be a juggernaut by the end of the season, but be clicking on all cylinders. And so that's where I expect a good game tonight.
I'm looking forward to it. Miami's kind of one of those wild cards too, where they've got a lot of talent on the team, but they've had some injuries. They weren't off to the best start for the season, but they've been kind of humming along themselves, and I'm sure that they're looking for a statement win against the Packers. So I'm really hoping the defense can take care of business and we can deliver another win for the green and gold.
It would be really nice. And while I spend much more time on Packer football than I do on the Badgers, I do want to mention that the Badgers play the Gophers tomorrow, and they host Minnesota, and that we are facing the possibility, well, the Badgers, are facing the possibility of their first losing record since 2001 and an end to a 22-year bowl streak if they fall tomorrow. So there's going to be a lot at stake in this game.
Yeah, it's going to be. Do you have a friendly wager with Dr. Lyerly?
No, but I sent a note. I sent a note to the person who was Goldie Gopher for all those years wearing that costume. And she remains a proud Gopher, but she is now a Badger fan. And I said, are you going to the game? And she texts back, of course, in all capital letters and many exclamation points. And I'm like, okay, I got you. And then she says, of course, I win either way. Of course she does.
Of course she does. Yeah, yeah. I'm hopeful that the Badgers can get the axe this weekend. So and it's a Friday game too, which is just a little wild to see the Badgers playing on Black Friday. You also got an NFL, the Thursday night football that was supposed to be later today because of Prime and those big contract deals. They're doing Black Friday football now too. So it's weird, all out of sorts football weekend. But you know, you get to enjoy the Packers on Thanksgiving, and that's always a fun aspect of this long holiday weekend.
Yeah. The Badger Minnesota game is 11 a.m. kickoff. You could watch it on CBS, but you'd be better off listening to a Civic Media radio station or the app. Yeah.
right?
Download the app. Yeah, it's free and easy to download. You can listen on several different civic media stations. My favorite to listen to is WFHR, locally grown radio. But we've got a number of options on there. Check out the civic media app and listen to the Badgers, hopefully bringing home that axe.
Yes, crushing the Gopher.
It wouldn't even be a fair fight if you had to put a Badger versus a Gopher, though, by the way. Like, the Badgers would take care of business every time.
Exactly. Luke, thanks for helping. Happy Thanksgiving. Come join us tomorrow for another This Day in History segment.
Sounds good, Pat. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
All right, everybody. Have a great Thanksgiving. We'll see you tomorrow.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.